kids who kill. Just ahead, why Duval County leads the state, sadly. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5 for First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Just ahead, youth homicide in Duval County. A special report from the Times Union, plus your calls. Get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, it's Color Me Kona, a look ahead to the world's largest coloring book party, plus a special live performance from local singer Kareen Zabana. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Tessa Duval of the Florida Times Union has spent the last 20 months investigating youth homicide in Duval County. Now, it turns out that Duval is second only to Miami-Dade County in a very dire category, the number of children arrested for cases of murder and manslaughter. Over the last 10 years, 73 kids in Jacksonville have been arrested for homicide. No other large county in Florida has a higher rate of minors going up on murder charges. And so this is a deep dive into data and looking at what is causing juvenile homicide offenders, trying to reveal their motives, their family trauma, and more. Tessa Duval of the TU joins us now in the studio with more about this investigation. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you. And as we look at this investigation into local kids who kill, what are your questions and comments? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937, or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org or tweets to @MelissaInJax. So what prompted this investigation?
So there's a couple of things. First of all, I cover juvenile life without parole for the Times Union, and most of those crimes, most of these kids who get life sentences were homicide offenders. And we have a really large number of those cases in our circuit, which also means we have a large number of kids who are being convicted of those crimes. And so when I would go to these resentencing hearings and listen to the backgrounds of their lives, you know, it didn't take long to really see a pattern emerge with learning disabilities, with unmitigated health concerns, with really tragic family situations. You know, maybe every adult in their life had been to jail multiple times, and just really started to see a very clear picture of the kids who end up the deepest in the system often have the most challenging and complex backstories themselves. So before they hurt people, they were hurt. And I would say the other thing is Jacksonville has had some very high profile youth homicide cases. I mean, we think about Christian Fernandez.
Right.
We think about Josh Phillips.
Maddie Clifton, who was killed. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are a lot of high profile cases, but there's a lot more that aren't high profile, but still, you know, rock our community. I mean, the Raines shooting, and I think back to around Thanksgiving of last year out at the beaches. So, I mean, there are multiple cases like this every year in our community.
It's 549-2937 to join the show. We are the murder capital of Florida.
Yes.
Have been off and on for the better part of 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But what's even more upsetting to learn is that we have the highest percentage of minors in the state, as you're reporting, committing homicides or manslaughter. And do we have an idea as to why Jacksonville holds this dubious distinction? Because you would think it might be a county like Miami-Dade.
Right. Right. So it's important to note the difference between like just the sheer number of crimes and the rate as well. So, you know, Miami-Dade has more than two times, you know, the number of kids that we do. But so when you adjust for our rate, it's actually higher. So it's important to take into account, like, we have the second most by, I guess, volume, if you will, after Miami-Dade, but they have a substantially larger
population.
And so there are a few things that have really emerged as key from this reporting on children. You know, first, this high prevalence of trauma. And Duval County does have a shortage of mental health care providers. So a lot of these kids are enduring really serious family situations, violence in their communities, and things that they need help with that they just never get the help. family dynamics are a huge part, you know, for kids who grow up with just a single mother. You know, those kids are more likely to live in poverty, and then that means living in challenged areas. Then there is just the prevalence of violence, and specifically gun violence. Like, we have a gun violence problem in the community, and that's not, you know, that's not a rights issue. That is a public health issue, really. So we have guns that are used in more crimes. And so carrying around guns as a teenager becomes very normal for a lot of kids. Either they want to feel cool, or they feel like they actually need it to protect themselves. And then finally, I would say a shortage of activities for teenagers. You know, there's a lot of things for elementary and, you know, the little kids to do. But when you get into the teenage years, that really drops off. And so, absent of anything positive, constructive, good to do, kids find each other and they find trouble.
If you're just tuning in, here's our question to callers. As we look at the Times Union investigation, when kids kill, and Jacksonville's high percentage of minors committing murder, how do you think the criminal justice system should handle minors who are charged with murder or manslaughter? Give us a call, 549-2937. And your role in this, Tessa, is to show that there's a reason these kids are acting the way they are. There's trauma, there's family breakdown, there's poverty, there's violent neighborhoods, there's a whole host of problems. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, in this judicial circuit, the Fourth Circuit, we have a state attorney now, Melissa Nelson, who's taken a very different approach to treating or incarcerating minors who have committed serious violent crimes. It's part of the reason why she ousted her predecessor, Angela Corey. How do you assess the way the criminal justice system is dealing with this issue in Duval County?
I would say in Duval County, and really nationally, the courts are recognizing that developmentally, children are different. Like, that is Supreme Court case law now, that children's brains are not fully developed, that they're more susceptible to doing impulsive things when their peers are around. They don't react as well under pressure. So all of these things, you know, are being recognized by the law.
Yeah, for example, Josh Phillips, who killed mm-hmm. Maddie Clifton in this city, they're both kids. What, mm-hmm. it's been 20 years now.
Yeah.
If that case were to go up today, he might not receive a life sentence, which is what he got.
Yeah, he was actually resentenced to life. And so that puts the issue of what the law recognizes and then what is actually being put into play kind of at odds with each other. So, you know, juveniles who receive life without parole, for the most part, are not actually supposed to have received that sentence. Like, the court says that only rare and uncommon juvenile offenders, only the most serious, you know, the most dangerous should receive those life sentences. And so a lot of kids who are in positions like Josh's will, you know, go back to court and make their case, you know.
And he tried to.
He tried to, yeah.
And they said.
And he did. He received a life sentence again.
Yeah.
So again, that kind of, you know, there are people who say, well, that was a heinous crime. And there are people on the other side who will say, well, he was a child. Look at all these mitigating circumstances. He's not irredeemable. So really, I mean, that's what the law says and how it's being put into play are sometimes different things.
If you're just tuning in, as we speak with Tessa Duval of the Florida Times Union about the new investigation in the paper this week, When Kids Kill, Duval County has a high percentage of youth homicide perpetrators, kids who are charged with murder or manslaughter. What do you think about this? Give us a call, 549-2937. Jessica is in San Marco right now. Hi, Jessica. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for looking at this topic on your show. I'm a big fan of your show in general because you always review timely subjects like this.
Thank you.
My comment, and I'll take your answer off the air, is that I know for personal experience that the largest healthcare providers or health insurance providers in our area, Florida Blue, Cigna, and Aetna, have drastically cut their provider reimbursement rates for mental health practitioners to the point where even my own child therapist is not taking any new patients with those three insurance providers, and those are probably the biggest in the state. So I wondered if there's anything that we as a community or even at the city level can even do to hold those insurers accountable for that and make them realize its connection to this kind of outcome.
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that question, because the mental health issue is such a big part of this, and there is not enough support, not nearly enough for kids with mental and behavioral health issues. And what about that? I mean, she's right. The insurance companies do not cover more than a few sessions?
Yeah, mental health care providers are generally reimbursed at a lower rate than physical health care providers. So that's part of it. And part of it is also the shortage. There is a shortage. I mean, when you look at, you know, the numbers of mental health counselors, marriage and family therapists, things, licensed clinical social workers, we have fewer of those per capita in our community than other parts of Florida, other metro communities. And then also there's the issue of access to psychiatrists who might be able to provide medication, and those who take Medicare. So that's like one layer of it. But then there's this layer of, say you even have insurance, say that someone, you know, you have insurance, you've been told, you know, maybe you need this. Then it's, okay, we're the largest land city by land area in the country. So does that provider in your community, can you get there? Will your parents sign off on it? Will your parents help take you? Do your parents even believe in it? Mm-hmm. Do your parents recognize that what you're going through is trauma? Because I've spoke to a parent for this story who endured a lot as a child herself. And I said, did you ever go to therapy, or did your son ever go to therapy? And she said, well, until you've been through what we've been through, you can't help us. A therapist would just tell us what to do, but they don't really know what it's like. So there's a distrust of mental health care among a lot of folks as well. So, I mean, it's not even just the insurance issue. There's you know, 10 other barriers in place for a lot of these kids.
549-2937. Regina. Regina on the north side. Hello, Regina.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Go ahead, Regina.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm great.
My position in this is the system, the judicial system, has a tendency of allowing the children to violate their probations once they show a need of attention. They violate their probation. They don't have a stern process of dealing with the children that show an issue at the early ages. So they develop into worse and worse behavior. And therefore, when they get to the age where they're able to decide whether to do right or do wrong, they see it to be so easy to do wrong because nothing is going to happen.
All right. Thanks for that. What do you think, Tessa?
So part of this reporting that I don't think we've mentioned yet was the fact that all of this information that I've gathered, not all of it, but a lot of it has come from speaking directly to incarcerated people themselves. So these are individuals who are from Duval County who are in prison now for murders or manslaughters that they took part in as kids. And a lot of them have been arrested multiple times before their murder or manslaughter charge. Some don't even remember how many times. And so to me, that speaks to these kids had points of contact with the system, but perhaps didn't receive the proper intervention. Like, you know, if a kid
Once they get into the system, a spiral begins. Like, you know, keeping them out of the system is the goal, because once it starts, they typically are not going to get the support they need to get back out.
Right, right. And then it also speaks to the fact that, you know, sending a kid away perhaps for 6 months is not the solution to all of the problems, right? Like, they're still going back to the same community. They're still going back to the same family, the same school, the same friends. And so those challenges remain. So it's not enough to just punish a child. There have to be resources in place to allow them to do better.
Talo is in San Marco. Hi, Talo. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Tessa, for taking on this really important issue, and I look forward to reading your report. My question is, have incarceration rates for children decreased since Melissa Nelson has taken office? The last time I checked, according to DJJ statistics, incarceration rates for girls in particular has actually increased by about 40%. So I'm just wondering what you have found out about that.
Okay, thanks for that question.
Yeah, so on the whole, arrests of Duval County youth are decreasing, and that's in large part because of misdemeanor offenses are now being handled with what's called a civil citation, which means that these young people who maybe are caught, you know, carrying out petty theft or drinking underage, things like that, are not being arrested and booked. They are instead receiving what's called a civil citation and allowed to complete a diversion program, which means that they don't walk away with
a criminal record.
A criminal record, right.
That was a big change that interfaith groups like iCare pushed right. for. Corey didn't want to do it.
Right.
Nelson did it.
Yeah.
But it sounds as though the data might be a little more complex given her call.
Yeah. So I do know that, we still are seeing dozens of children every year being charged as adults. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I do know that felony arrests in the last year are down among Duval County youth. New data just came out earlier this week, from the Department of Juvenile Justice, but really, there's still two more years to really take a hard look at what's happening under the Melissa Nelson administration.
It's 549-2937 to join the show. We'll go to your tweets and Facebook comments in just a minute. Stanley is on the north side. Hey, Stanley. Good morning to you.
Yes. Thank you. I agree with everything she said. My part with the African American Economic Recovery Think Tank, we are looking at the social engagement component with intervention, especially in the African American community, because what we found out that in a Caucasian community, they got, for the youth, they got anywhere from 10 to 20 activities. In the African American community, they only have two activities, and that's football and basketball. On the majority, and that make a big difference in youth activities and what they believe in and what they see. Thank you.
Okay. And that gets back to what you were discussing, things for kids to do after school and after school programming.
Yeah.
That's a big problem.
So you talk to, the experts, the PhDs in this area about what helps keep kids on the right track. And they'll tell you there's a lot of merit to just having a safe place to play basketball or to do homework or just somewhere where there are caring adults around. Like, that goes a long way. Like, that's not going to solve the entire problem, but it's a start, and it's not particularly a difficult thing to pull off. You know, a lot of the individuals who I wrote letters with were like, well, my family was always poor and we moved around a lot, but I love football, but I only ever got to play 2 years because we couldn't afford to keep me on the team. Or I wish that I could have done jujitsu or kung fu, but we didn't have that nearby and no one ever put me in it. So I ask all of these young people who I wrote with, like, what do you think would have helped you? And the most common answers were, a caring adult, like someone who could mentor me, be a role model, be a good example, because they didn't have a positive adult in their lives a lot of the time. And just really just activities that could have helped them stay focused. Like, one individual loved aviation and he would love to work on planes, not even just be a pilot, but to actually, get his hands dirty, like working on a plane. And he's like, but I had no way of learning about airplanes, not that he knew about, not that was accessible to him. Mm-hmm. So I think that, the shortage of activities is a huge thing. Like, you drive around some communities, I just did this a couple weeks ago, and the parks after school are empty. And there's, there's probably a lot of reasons for that. Mm-hmm. is it safe? Are they well lit? Do parents want their kids going there? I mean, you don't see that in other parts of town. You see families and the parks are crowded. It's a nice sunny day. We're starting to get a little gray, shorter hours. So, shorter daylight hours. And so when there is a nice day, like, you see these parks full, but you don't see that in other communities.
Just yesterday, we had on this program City Council President Aaron Bowman, and he talked about a new task force that's mm-hmm. being put together to address the issue of violent crime in Jacksonville. And this is by far from the city's first go-round with a task force or a commission or an initiative. And, you know, as I hear you talk, Tessa, I'm reminded of the fact that years ago, the Jacksonville Journey put together, that was another anti-crime mm-hmm. initiative, put together a huge raft of efforts to address the problem of kids not having mentors, not having activities after school. This was all discussed in exhaustive detail by a million committees, and there was this huge citywide commitment made to addressing it, and then it lost its funding.
Yeah, even before that, there was the JCCI study on murder in, I believe, 2006. And so this is an issue that we've been faced with before. And we see people get really fired up after things like the shooting at the Rainsley football game and events like that, that really are shocking and grab people's attention. But the reality is this has been going on a long time in Jacksonville. And, you know, I was at an event recently where someone said, well, how do we convince city leaders they need to pay for, you know, long-term solutions for this? And my response is, well, we're already paying for it. We're paying for it by incarcerating these young people who don't get interventions for decades, if not the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, it costs over $20,000 a year to incarcerate the average inmate in Florida prisons. And so multiply that by 30 years times, you know, 100 plus kids from our community. Like, we're paying for it. We're just not paying to stop it. Like, that's the difference. And so, you know, this is a complex issue in which family dynamics, socioeconomic status, access to education, to activities. I mean, this is not simple, which means that it will take a complex solution to bring this number down, but you don't get that by focusing on it intently for a year or two and then be like, oh, well, problem solved, moving on.
Right.
Like, you can't have a crisis reaction to this issue. And I'm not saying that's what the committee is. I'm just saying Jacksonville has had this conversation before, and it's always good to talk about the issue, but we have to move beyond the conversation.
Jay tweets the show, did the report look at the history of youthful offenders to see if other patterns emerged in their previous arrests? Usually murder, manslaughter is not the first charge.
No, absolutely.
You did find that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And lots of comments on Facebook. How does violence in the home affect the rate of violence outside the home? Children who commit violence must be seeing it in their home first. And here's another comment. What about when kids die? Every day, 19 children are shot in America. Nearly 1,300 kids under the age of 18 die every year from gunshot wounds. There's good evidence showing that more gun ownership means more suicides by firearm. And here's another comment from Lisa. When will parents be held accountable for their children's actions?
There's so much good stuff to unpack in all of those comments. So one thing I want to point out is, I'm glad this was brought up, is that Jacksonville actually, Duval County actually has the highest rate over the last decade, I believe, of children also being gun violence homicide victims. So I think about 3 out of every 100,000 children will die by gun violence. Which is, again, higher than, you know, most all of other metro counties in Florida. So, that does speak to the prevalence of gun violence in our community, as well as the UF Health Center in Jacksonville had a study recently about pediatric gunshot wound victims and found that, and this is, you know, victims who survived and victims who didn't, found that of the juveniles, the kids that they treated, the kids who are most affected by gun violence are living in the urban core. So you have not only kids who are being shot, but kids who hear gunshots, who see gun violence. And that brings us back to trauma. Maybe you don't have the physical trauma, but you have the mental trauma that comes with it. And I also want to talk about the parenting comment, because I hear that a lot just in talking to people about this reporting, is that it's the parents, it's the parents, it's the parent, it's the parents. And that's true to an extent. I don't believe that anybody wants to be a bad parent. No one wants to fail their child. Some parents just don't know how to do better because they've never seen better. So that's one thing that I have found with a lot of these cases is that, you know, there's a substance abuse problem or there's domestic violence in the home, or for whatever reason, you know, a parent can't adequately supervise and parent their own child. They don't know how. They've never seen it. They weren't raised that way. And then the other issue is a lot of parents believe that by working two or three jobs to provide for their kid and have a safe place and make sure they have clothes and shoes and food and the lights are on, that that's doing enough. But that also leaves a lot of unsupervised time.
Mm-hmm. Let's take one more call. It's Greg on the north side. Hi, Greg. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make the comment. There are a lot of organizations that are in our challenged communities. One in particular, the Police Athletic League, and I may be a little bit biased because I am a police officer, but the Police Athletic League is doing a lot to address issues of children not having anywhere to go.
Yeah.
They have great mentoring programs, great after-school programs, great athletic programs. But what they have added that may be different from a lot of other organizations is a mental health aspect. They've hired mental health counselors to address the mental health issues. And I think we sometimes forget two issues. One is mental health, and then we leave parents out.
Mm-hmm.
Parents love their children,
mm-hmm.
but they may not know exactly how to love their children. So I'll take any of the comments you
sure.
have off of air.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. And you're absolutely right. PAL does a great job working with kids in the community. And I thought it was mostly sports, but the mental health piece is important to learn about. Thanks for that call.
That's fantastic. I mean, anywhere that kids can access those kinds of services. And he brought up parents as well, which is so important because, again, like we know that trauma and the things that families endure are often learned or generational. And so, you know, really wrapping around the whole family is something that that's what it'll take to help move the needle.
Well, this is just an introduction to Tessa's reporting. I'd encourage everyone to pick up a paper or go online to jacksonville.com and learn about this issue. It's called When Kids Kill. Tessa Duvall, always good to see you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here. Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later, it's our 24 in 24, how you can support WJCT this holiday season. We're going to take your donations for just 24 hours. But up next, putting your dollars towards sustainability. A look at the North Florida Green Chamber. That's next.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Well, addressing the impacts of climate change is going to take the support and the dollars of the business community. Increasingly, business owners are jumping in, and many of them are now joining a new chamber of commerce in our area focused on sustainability. And that's our Going Green today. Christina Kelkors is Executive Director of the North Florida Green Chamber of Commerce. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And of course, all chambers are green in terms of the dollars, but this is green in terms of sustainability. And so very exciting to have you on the show. Tell me about the Green Chamber. How did this get started?
Well, it got started because, first of all, I was passionate about it, and I also felt guilty when I did things that were hurting the environment, and I wanted to know how I could do better. My past, I did do some sustainable and green investing for clients, and I wanted to know how to take that further. I actually started researching, and I found out that it was a good time. It's a growing movement, and worldwide, people are, and businesses in particular, are starting to make changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. And you are the local chapter of the national U.S. Green Chamber of Commerce. And there are some major players involved with this at the national level, right?
Absolutely. The U.S. Green Chamber started a couple of years ago. And they are growing. They are adding cities and states. Every year they're adding a new city or a state, and we're the newest chapter.
Okay, so the time is right for this in North Florida. What type of impact are you hoping to make? You need businesses to join, but there are certain benefits they get, and there are also, I would guess, certain criteria you have for them to be part of this.
Absolutely. So we decided that in North Florida, we were going to take any business that wants to be a part of this. However, there is a caveat to that because we are not going to be promoting any businesses either on our website, our social media, our green marketplace, our apps. We won't be promoting businesses unless they're taking the step to actually make some sustainable changes. We are taking anybody as a member because we're going to be offering an educational aspect and workshops, and a lot of people want to be sustainable, they just don't know how. So we're not going to exclude them from membership because they don't know how.
And so how can people join and how can they be part of these workshops? You have some stuff coming up in January. Yeah?
Yes. Thanks for bringing that up. We have in January, we have our big launch party. So we are a new chapter here in North Florida and we are making our presence known January 17th. Doors open at 6:00 at Mosh. And anybody can come by. You can pre-register on our website. You can come and join us at the event and learn more about what we're going to be offering, what benefits we're going to have. We'll have some guest speakers from some of our supporters. The benefits are going to be, there's going to be a lot of benefits for business owners who join. And I think I get the question a lot, well, what will I get out of being a member? Mm-hmm. We're going to go through that at the launch so that people understand everything that they would be getting.
All right. You can learn more at northfloridagreenchamber.org. Lots about sustainability, how your business can become a more environmentally conscious and sustainable business, how you can join the Green Chamber and come on out to their event January 17th, right, at the Mosh. So Christina Kelkors, thanks so much for being with us. She's Executive Director of the North Florida Green Chamber. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Still to come, some live music, but up next, Color Me Kona at Kona Skate Park.
StoryCorps and WJCT for an evening of conversation and storytelling Thursday, December 13th at WJCT Studios, 6:30 p.m. reception with a presentation at 7. Meet the StoryCorps staff as they discuss storytelling and oral histories and why it is so important to preserve them today. Listen to real conversations collected during StoryCorps' Jacksonville visit. The event is free, but reservations are required. Go to wjct.org/events.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The Best in Classic and Modern Blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
WJCT readers are here for you. With the Florida Times Union, complete with news, op-eds, and obits, our readers will bring the paper to life to serve those with blindness and other physical challenges. Need our service? Go online to wjct.org/radio reading. Listen there and register as a listener, or we'll send you a special radio free. Call us at 904-358-6308, because at Radio Reading, we give voice to the printed word.
Welcome back. Well, it's billed as the world's largest coloring book party. Doesn't that sound like fun? It's an award-winning event, and it's called Color Me Kona at Jacksonville's own beloved Kona Skate Park. Artist Nicole Holderbaum is here to kind of give us a preview. We'll try to paint a picture in your minds about this. It's pretty amazing. Hey, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Okay, so Kona Skate Park, I believe, is the oldest skate park in America.
It's the oldest operating skate park in the world.
In the world.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I got that wrong. And of course, so it's a Jacksonville gem, and it's in the city. It's in Arlington.
Arlington, yeah.
And so at Kona Skate Park, you're going to have just an incredible thing. You did this last year. It's called Color Me Kona, and it made a big splash last time. So this year it's back even bigger. What's going to be happening at this thing?
So we're so excited this year because we've included so many more artists, a lot of young artists. Our performance component has blossomed to a list of 28 young local performers that are each absolutely incredible. I wouldn't miss any of them. I would definitely try to get there as early as you can. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, we have like at least 10 murals being painted around the park right now, new murals on top of the ones that we painted last year. We have a ton of different artwork that's going to be on display, art installations, sculpture. Of course, there's going to be a skateboarding component. We'll have a mini ramp skate contest, a ton of vendors, and of course, the coloring book mural walls, which everyone is welcome to paint. We have a section for toddlers to paint. We have a section for elementary school age and middle school and high school age. So everyone will have a good chance to paint.
These are going to be large-scale murals that the public can help create. That's kind of a rare opportunity.
Yeah. Each one of these murals is about 8 feet tall and 20 foot wide. Each one is designed by a local Jacksonville artist, like a giant coloring book page, basically. And each of these artists has really put a lot of work into these designs. And I really can't wait to watch everyone color them in.
Now, you've been doing this all over town. A couple of years ago, you received a Spark grant from the Cultural Council and Florida Blue. With that, you launched the Jack's Kids Mural Festival. So you've been going all over the city creating opportunities for kids to make murals.
Yeah.
Which is the coolest thing in the world. And I bet they love it.
Yeah. We've, the Jack's Kids Mural Festival, which is kind of what Color Me Kona, it morphed into what Color Me Kona is now. Color Me Kona serves as a fundraiser for the Kids Mural Project, which is our outreach program, which is what we go into Title I schools around the city. We've been to 30 schools so far and painted over 30 murals with over 3,000 youth around the city. And Color Me Kona is a fundraiser, so we can raise funds to continue going to schools and painting with kids, as well as provide opportunities for young local artists around the community to kind of expand their career, learn, grow, get exposure for their work, get paid, et cetera.
It's an amazing project. And you sort of create the template. It looks like a coloring book, and then they can fill it in.
Yeah.
I can't think of a more exciting thing for a kid to get to do. And then it's permanent. They can see their work forever. That's the way that you put this together is just so extraordinary. And I'm curious to just get your thoughts on, when you see the kids doing this, what kinds of reactions do you get from them? How do they react to this?
Well, when we do the murals in the schools, the main thing isn't even painting the murals. It's coming up with the design. It's empowering the kids to design the mural themselves. So I kind of have a conversation with them about what's going on in their life. You know, what do they think about their future? What do they want to do for their future? Who do they want to be? Their strengths, their weaknesses. We just have a big conversation together as a group, and I kind of lead them through the process of designing the mural. So they get to design the mural completely, which is a very empowering thing for them. It lets them know that their opinion is important, their voice matters, they're worthy of greatness and admiration and love and care. So the most important thing is that itself. And then, of course, the painting part is super fun. You know, painting can be a very therapeutic experience for a lot of people, especially children, to kind of process traumas or issues that they're going through in life. So all around, it's a very impactful project, I think. I'd like to think.
And I'm looking through the images from last year's Color Me Kona. It looks like it was just a fantastic day. All the mural painting, all the skateboarding, there's balloons flying everywhere. There's music, there's kids just jumping up and down. You know, just an incredible experience. And as you said, if you've never been to Kona Skate Park, you really owe it to yourself to go, because this is a Jacksonville hidden gem. It is literally the longest continuously operating skate park in the world. So professional skateboarders, don't they kind of have it on their list of places they want to visit?
Yeah, definitely.
It's well known in their world. Yeah.
I wish my kind of partner in crime, Cassidy Ramos, was here. She is part of the Ramos family, which is the family that owns and operates Kona Skate Park. And they have dedicated their lives to the youth of Jacksonville through this park. And the park itself is, it's incredible. I mean, it's like a wonderland. You walk through the doors and it's like you're in a whole different world. It's just absolutely beautiful. There's so much history. And for them to let us come in and paint all these murals and add all this artwork, it's just, it's really special. The whole thing is just really special, and really special for Jacksonville.
Okay, so with all of that said, Color Me Kona, the world's largest coloring book party, is coming up this weekend, Saturday, December 15th. How can people, can they just show up? Do they need a ticket? How does it work?
So in order to get into the event, it's just a donation of any amount. We want to make the event accessible to anyone, you know, we just want it to be accessible to all. So if you can only donate 50 cents, that's fine. If you donate $100, that's great. Mm-hmm. All of the money goes to support the Kids Mural Project, future projects working with youth in the community and empowering local artists here as well. So by donating to get into the event, you're contributing to the future of Duval Arts and Culture.
And you might learn something too. Bring a skateboard. Teach your kid how to board. You might be surprised how excited your kids get about that.
There's a free skateboarding clinic, which is open to anyone. So definitely check that out.
What time does the fun start?
It starts at 10 a.m.
Okay. It's Color Me Kona, the second annual event, 10 a.m. Saturday in Arlington at Kona Skate Park. Go to colormekona.com for more. And Nico Holderbaum, the creator of all this excitement, kudos to you.
Thank you.
Just like my friend Carrie Speckman, you have pink hair. People with pink hair are always people that I like.
I can never change the color now.
I know. It's your trademark.
Yeah.
Okay. In a moment, a live performance from singer Kareem Zabana and our 24 in 24 pledge drive. We'll be right back.
Be a presenter at WJCT's 6th Annual Teach Conference and event designed to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. WJCT is seeking creative, innovative, and informative sessions for our Teach Better Together conference on Saturday, March 2nd, 2019. Presenters have the opportunity to connect with educators from across the First Coast. Breakout session proposals will be accepted until 5 p.m. Friday, January 4th. Go to wjct.org, teach.
Tax relief for the wrongfully convicted that most exonerees don't know about.
It made the difference between paying off debts, getting health care, covering essential matters in their lives.
We talked to one man on a mission to help the wrongfully convicted get their due. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Your company builds rockets, and eventually those rockets are going to take people to space. But being in charge, well, sometimes it ain't all that great.
My job basically is to solve the problems that people that work for me can't resolve themselves, right?
I'm Kai Rizdal. A visit to SpaceX and the woman running things day to day. That is next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
He's a wealthy sex offender with friends in high places, including the current Secretary of Labor. Jeffrey Epstein worked his connections to dodge a lengthy prison sentence. Those connections included Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta, who at the time was Miami's top federal prosecutor. Miami Herald reporter Julie Brown on Epstein and Secretary Acosta next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, a special treat. Opera baritone Kareem Zabana will be in concert Saturday night at the First United Methodist Church on Duval Street in Jacksonville. But we have a preview right now as this growing in reputation performer joins us live in studio. Hey, Kareem, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having you. And your concert is sponsored by the American Civility
Correct.
Association, trying to end school bullying. What a great cause.
Yes, it's... Yeah, it's a blessing. Yeah.
Okay, so what are you going to be singing for us?
Well, I'll be singing a medley. I have here on the guitar Carlos, my very good friend, and my brother on the piano, Fued. And we are going to sing a medley. I'm dreaming of the white Christmas and have a holly jolly Christmas and like, you know, favorites for Christmas. People will love it.
All right, here he is, Kareem Zabana and band. Take a listen.
Just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. Christmas. to friends you know and everyone you meet. Oh, the mistletoe is hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you. Kiss her once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas when you walk down the street. Oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year. You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Making a list and checking it twice. He's gonna find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming. Santa Claus is coming. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Saturday night, December 15th at the First United Methodist Church. Thanks, Kareem.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And before we wrap up the show, if you like that music, if you like what you hear on 89.9, you know what? You need to support us right now by dialing 353-9528 because we're trying to raise $24,000 in just 24 hours. Our news director, Jessica Palumbo, and our station manager, David Luckin, are here to tell you how to do it. Hey, guys.
Well, it's so important. Jessica, you go first.
Yes, if you just go to wjct.org/radio, you can make your gift right now. We're trying to raise $24,000 in 24 hours. It's a one-day pledge drive to end the year right for WJCT. If you are a listener of First Coast Connect and you can't get enough of it every morning, you have to have First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross to start your morning, or you're listening to the replay at 8 o'clock, whichever it is, please support First Coast Connect and keep it on the air. Keep it on the app, keep it wherever you're listening to it by going to 353-9528 now.
And after First Coast Connect at night, if you like our music, the Electro Lounge, Blues Horizon, String Theory, Damian Lamar with Taste Test, all these great programs we had, Keith Marks with Avant. We need your phone call right now. We give you news and information all day that keeps you intelligent, and we give you good music at night that keeps you entertained. So make the phone call now, 353-9528, 24 and 24. We can do it with just $1,000 an hour.
That's right. We're going to keep this pledge drive short and sweet so that we don't interrupt your holiday fun too much, and you can do your part at the close of 2018 to keeping public radio strong and vibrant on the First Coast in 2019. So this is why we're doing this quickly in just 24 hours, because you guys out there said you don't like long pledge drives. So let us keep this short by you making the call right now. Dial 353-9528 or go online to wjct.org, make your pledge there, and support public radio. Help us meet our goal of $24,000 in just 24 hours. With your help out there, we can do it. Make the call right now, 353-9528 or wjct.org. Whew, we got it in there quickly, didn't we, guys?
Thank you.
Okay, 1A's up next. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow, everyone. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.